Yeah, we have got ultimately what it seems to boil down to is UNC saying, yes, this happened. We accept the wrongdoing associated with that. We failed to monitor specifically Jan Boxall as part of this, and that's that. But NCAA, this is not under your umbrella of jurisdiction, and that seems to be where the line is going to be drawn with this. We've made we've had a chance to view this kind of along the way, of course, because it has been, as you were saying, so widely reported for a long time here just before we went on the air. And you've seen this progress a little bit from UNC taking a stance of, we're just putting it all out there and waiting to see, to kind of taking a little bit of a harder line with the NCAA here, and of saying, we've reviewed your bylaws. We know what is under your umbrella of authority and what is not. Mm-hmm. And the university certainly does not feel that what the NCAA is charging, in all of the aspects that the NCAA is charging, is under their purview.
So all of this is coming out of the Weinstein report. So one of the things in the UNC's response is, at this point, people who have been kind of observing this for the last, 49 years, I think, something like that, six years, got to get it right, for the last 6 years might be thinking that this notice of allegations has to do with all of that. It doesn't. This is coming out of the Weinstein report, those anomalous classes, the AFAM, the paper classes that were covered in the Weinstein report, and improper benefits that the Weinstein report uncovered that came out of the ASPCA and Jan Boxall in particular. So the five allegations that we're dealing with right now, and this came from the NCAA earlier this year, allegation number one has to do with extra benefits provided specifically by Jan Boxall.
Yeah, and let's take these one by one, because specific response to each of these from the NCAA.
But just to summarize, allegations number two and three deal with Julius Nyangoro and Deborah Crowder, who are the two at the center of the AFAM paper class scandal, their lack of cooperation with the NCAA. Allegation number four deals with failure to monitor the ASPSA and Jan Boxall again in particular. And then allegation five is that big one, the lack of institutional control.
Right.
So going back to allegation number one, which is specific to Jan Boxall.
Yeah, they're saying in the NCAA's charges that in a series of emails that they reference back to, and of course you can go find all of this at chapelboro.com, that Jan Boxall knowingly provided extra benefits to student athletes, particular members of the women's basketball team, because mm-hmm. she was the academic counselor for the women's basketball team at Carolina. So that is what the NCAA is charging. The university, in its response, acknowledged that Boxall did provide those extra benefits, but where they differ from the NCAA is the NCAA takes it a step further and says that Boxall acted in an unethical manner. Mm-hmm. And UNC is saying, this is a quote here, disagrees that Boxall engaged in unethical conduct as defined by the NCAA's bylaws there, saying even though her actions fell short of the university's own standards. So UNC is arguing that in the overall circumstance of this, UNC holds itself to a certain standard. Boxall fell short of that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that is not something that the NCAA has any reach into.
Like, might have given extra benefits, but didn't do it as, like, tenting her fingers in her office late at night and saying, I'm definitely going to cheat right now.
In a manner to, provide any kind of harm or anything to the university as a whole. So UNC is arguing that under those circumstances, as UNC understands them and views them entirely, would drop that from a level one to a level three infraction, because it's no longer the unethical conduct portion of it. It's just the knowingly provided extra benefits mm-hmm. part of it. So again, parsing out the two different phases of this, allegations two and three are the easiest to handle on this, because it's the fact that Nyangoro and Crowder did not meet with the NCAA.
Right.
There's not really anything to argue there. UNC accepted that they didn't, but those are by far, in a way, not the most important portions of the notice of
allegations. And I don't know, like, just taking a look at this this summary here, and I know the actual response is about 75 pages long. Is UNC accepting blame for this? Because one of the sort of the points of confusion on those two allegations is the NCAA is trying to hold UNC responsible for what Nyengorter and Crowder did, or in this case didn't do. They didn't meet with the NCAA. They didn't cooperate long after they were no longer UNC employees.
Right.
UNC saying we shouldn't be punished for this because they weren't employees, or are they accepting?
I'll just read you through this and we can go from there. The university accepts that Nyengorter and Crowder violated the NCAA's ethical conduct legislation when they did not cooperate with the current investigation despite repeated requests by the enforcement staff and the university. Unfortunately, the university could not compel Nyengorter and Crowder, former employees, to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of their really response in the quick summation of the rundown
right.
here. So it sounds like they are accepting whatever responsibility there is to be accepted in that case. And I think that will be one that you could hear about back and forth in the Committee on Infractions panel hearing that is very likely going to be held later on this year.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with WCHL's Blake Hodgkin, news director. Again, earlier today, UNC issuing, making public its response to the amended notice of allegations from the NCAA. That came to UNC earlier this year, about 97 days ago, thereabouts. They got that extra week beyond the 90 days to respond. They delivered the response to the NCAA yesterday, made it public today. It's available online, chapelboro.com. You can head to our website and get the link. Let's talk about allegations. Four, because I think this is the more interesting one to discuss, because this is the one that gets to the question of exactly what is the NCAA's jurisdiction here in
right.
terms of punishing UNC for things that clearly happened, but who is responsible for divvying out punishment?
Yeah, so allegation number four is that UNC failed to monitor Jan Boxall and that the university failed to monitor the department that oversees the academic support for student athletes. That's the ASPSA that you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so the university is saying, okay, we failed to monitor Jan Boxall in this case. You can go along with that. And that goes back to allegation number one, admitting that certainly extra benefits were provided. But the university is arguing against the fact of the department overall, because it's saying there are jurisdictional and procedural issues that are barring that allegation from being brought by the NCAA, going back to a couple of different things. One being the fact that there's a 4-year statute of limitations on these things with
right.
the NCAA, and saying that the NCAA was aware of these emails and things in 2011 during the first crack at all this stuff all those many years ago and didn't make anything of it at that time. So what has changed,
mm-hmm.
nothing factual with those emails, the university is arguing, has changed during that time. So how are you now going to bring charges whenever your statute of limitations is run up? And there are those procedural or jurisdictional issues, I should say, over whether the NCAA has the room and the purview within their umbrella of authority to go into that arena.
Yeah. Because number one, there's that statute of limitation question, and we'll have to see if that flies with the NCAA when they have their hearing and when they respond to that down the road. But the other provision of the response to the allegation is, look, yes, there was failure to monitor, there were violations, there were discrepancies and anomalies, but these were, and this was something that we talked about when the Weinstein report came out a couple of years ago, these were classes that, at least technically speaking, whether they were created by Crowder and Nyengorter for the benefit of specifically athletes, they were definitely available to all students,
right.
undergraduates, whether they were athletes or not. And if that's the case, does the NCAA have the jurisdiction to step in and issue punishment?
And that's certainly,
and that's an open question.
Right. And that's what UNC is arguing in this, saying that, quoting here from the response, the NCAA's constitution and bylaws do not extend to matters related to academic structure, content, and processes on a member institution's campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is probably the most direct response to what you were just saying there in the legal terms
mm-hmm.
of this NCAA response, of saying we have very thoroughly reviewed the NCAA's constitution and bylaws here, and if you try to charge us with anything outside of that realm, there's going to be pushback
yeah.
from what UNC is saying here. And I think that there's no more clear iteration of that than in this fifth allegation, the lack of institutional control.
Yeah, so let's get to that one, which is the lack of institutional control. And that, again, is the most significant allegation, because lack of institutional control is that phrase that everyone talks about when they talk about NCAA investigations. Oh, man, if we use that phrase in the notice of allegations, that's really significant.
It's also the most vague.
And Bubba Cunningham earlier today was talking, responding to, I think, a DTH reporter who asked about this. How do you define lack of institutional control? Well, there's no real clear definition. And that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, there's no clear definition, therefore the NCAA can never enforce any penalties on an institution for lack of institutional control because it's undefined, but they have to be really clear on what that means.
And it's certainly not the university's place to make that definition,
I think
is what they would argue, saying that it's an NCAA charge. If they don't put any kind of definition to that charge, how is the university expected to comply with that rule? To make a cross reference here, whenever we're talking about so much with House Bill 2 and everything going on right now, if you don't explicitly lay out what ramifications are going to be, or how this is going to be enforced, or all of these things.
Be it known, it took us 10 minutes to tie this back to House Bill 2.
I'm just saying that.
I was thinking about that too. Yeah.
Random parallels.
Like the way that things are defined or not defined make a difference. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
So UNC is rebutting this entirely, saying that they do not believe that lack of institutional control is a just charge in this, saying the university, quote, disagrees with this allegation. UNC is saying that the issues being alleged to bring about the lack of institutional control charge are related to issues that are under, again, the umbrella of the accrediting body, SACS.
Which has already finished this.
They already closed this book. UNC was on probation for a year, and then back in May of this year, I believe it was, restored UNC to full status at its board meeting, restored UNC to full accreditation status, whatever the proper wording is on that, took them off of probation, and they're going along business as usual. So again, UNC is saying these things happened. They're not up to UNC standards. The people that were associated with these things most directly are no longer here. We have put 70 reforms in to monitor these things to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And by the way, NCAA, this isn't your world.
Yeah.
And that's the easiest way that I can boil this down.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that last point gets to, I think, what for a lot of people observing this, and I think especially maybe NC State fans more than anything else, because that's the sharpest criticism of UNC has come from those blogs. But for people who are observing this, one of the most frustrating things about this whole process is that difference between legality and morality.
And right.
What's right and what's legal. So in this case, obviously, you've got 18 years of fraudulent classes. You've got impermissible benefits. You've got benefits that were provided to students and student athletes, whether there was an intent to be unethical or not. They were obviously over and above what was allowed. But there's a morality there. You look at this situation, you say, man, this 18-year scandal is going on. Somebody needs to be stepping in and imposing penalties on UNC for this. But then the legal question, who actually has jurisdiction to do it? Is it the NCAA or is it someone else? It may not be the NCAA. That's something that's just still going to have to be determined. And I guess it's up to the NCAA to determine whether they have jurisdiction. So,
well, not only in this case, but if the NCAA attempts to argue that it does have purview over things in the classroom involving student athletes, that is going to open up an entirely new realm for the NCAA to govern.
Yeah.
The NCAA has had plenty of governance issues over the last couple of years anyway, and people asking the question, do we even need the NCAA around entirely to govern athletics solely?
Yeah, this would be an attempt by the NCAA to widen their net at a time when people are saying we shouldn't have that net at all, which is another interesting question.
There's so many lines in this to let the NCAA know that if you come to this hearing or come out of this hearing with things that don't line up with your bylaws, be prepared for them to be challenged. The UNC response says, the NCAA has no authority over the operations of an academic department or the courses it offers to an institution's student body. And notice they said student body there, not specifically student athletes, because as you said, these were not courses. While they may have been disproportionately filled with UNC students or student athletes, I should say, because at the rate with which they were filled versus the rate of student athletes in the overall student body, they were open to students in general. There were non-student athletes in these classes in some cases. So I think the most the lines from this and the conclusion from UNC that stand out the most to me are talking about this Committee on Infractions hearing that very likely is going to be held in October, I think, is the next time they'll come up with this.
Here.
And then it's like 6 to 8 weeks after that before any kind of potential infractions are levied against UNC. And then, again, that doesn't necessarily mean the end of the road, I guess. They could try to go to an actual place of law, a courtroom, to figure this out. But it says, if the hearing panel determines that penalties are to be imposed, the university believes that they must be tied directly to a particular violation of NCAA bylaws and, in all instances, must be applied in a fair and consistent manner. It would be an unprecedented application of NCAA rules to impose a penalty on institutional employees, student-athletes, or sports programs that are not the subject of or even referenced in an allegation in the ANOA, amended notice of allegations there. So they're very clearly saying if you step out of what we believe to be your jurisdiction here, we're going to call you on it.
Yeah. And what would at that point happen if they did? Who do you appeal to? You mentioned there might be sort of legal recourse. I should mention that Jim Woodall, the DA in Orange County, has been involved in this and decided a while ago not to pursue anything further than he already has.
Yeah, so. And that that was before my time here. So
that
forgive
was, yeah,
me
that
if,
was a while
I, if
ago,
I'm
right.
for, you know fudging any of the details here, but it seemed like there was a correlation there of the dropping of the charges and the cooperation with the Weinstein report.
With the Weinstein report, yes, that's right.
For Niangaro. Yep. So there were...
And then he cooperated with the Weinstein report, but then not with the NCAA for some reason.
Right. Well, yeah. I think the argument there is the NCAA at that point, I think the charges of Niangaro and Crowder not cooperating precedes that a little bit. I think that at that point, the NCAA is having their work done for them by somebody that's getting more access, so they're sitting on their hands until the end of the Weinstein
report.
Some of
that was after, though, too. Yeah. Some of that was the NCAA saying, oh, Weinstein report, now we need to go back and investigate. Hey, Niangaro or Crowder, can we talk to you? And
still,
at that point, they're saying no. I guess that's partly because the Weinstein report doesn't have sanctions attached to it, whereas the NCAA very well may. But we should mention that Jan Boxall has been very much discussed in all of this. Mm-hmm. She, through her lawyer, issued a long response of her own to the NOA earlier today. And again, it's a long response, but I'll quote from part of it. The first line of it is the summation. It did not happen. Not one of the allegations against Jan Boxall is true. That's the opening line.
It's a strong opening.
It's a strong opening. It goes on to the second paragraph, and I'll quote this. The bitter irony is that the handful of examples that UNC and the NCAA have chosen to question involve students whose personal life circumstances were unimaginably horrible. It was not because they were athletes that they needed and got extraordinary devotion and extra attention. It was because they were students who needed and deserved a college education. They were not going to survive in the university with the daily challenge of dealing with their life circumstances. And that's, again, part of Jan Boxall's response. And this gets back to what she's been saying really from the beginning. Every time she makes a public statement, which isn't common now, but when she has, it's been, look, I wasn't trying to break rules or help athletes or get the women's basketball team eligible. I was trying to help students who were in trouble.
And
so that's her response there.
And based on her story where she grew up, and definitely would say that she credits a lot of where she ended up getting to in life on the help of others, and whether that meant stepping in some of these cases where she has said, I was providing examples for things to work off of. And we've talked about this before. any student on campuses across North Carolina, I went to Appalachian State, I'm sure the same thing is in place at UNC. I could take a paper that I wrote to the Writing Center at App, and they would review it and mark it up and then give it back to me and say, these are the kind of revisions you need to make. And it sounds like she certainly believes in what she has said so far, that that's what she was doing. She was providing an example of what to do. You could do something like this. And if some of those cases, it ended up being the actual paper that was put into place, then, you know, we're continuing down this road that ultimately is going to circle back to a much larger discussion, which we are not going to solve in this, of giving, not preparing certain segments of our society to walk onto a college campus and be successful. And there's an achievement gap that is a common term that we even talk about in Chapel Hill Carbondale City Schools a lot. But
it took us 20 minutes to get to the achievement gap.
We're good markers.
Tying this to everything.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of cases. You present people that have not been, educated in a way that may seem normal for a lot of the society, specifically here around Chapel Hill Carbondale, where you've got one of the best public school systems in the country. And in the state in particular, right here. But they're not always being prepared to that level. And then you put them on a campus with student-athletes coming into a campus expected to succeed at a university with the reputation of UNC. That's not realistic.
Right.
So, you know, it's defining that line of helping a student that is desperately in need of help. It may not be for the sake of the women's basketball team. It may be for the sake of that student. And I think that's what Jan Boxall is arguing.
And that gets to, I think, the larger question, which is, if that's the case at UNC, that's also the case at literally every other major university in America. So, like, how far does this go?
But the help is the difference, because, you know, whether there were easy classes at App that I took a few of because I needed an easy class that semester. There were classes that I showed up to three times a week and just had to kind of sit through, and it wasn't the hardest thing to do in the world. But helping that student in desperate need of that is different than setting up sham classes artificially inflate those grades.
Although it's also a different allegation too.
We're going into a different realm there.
We got to let you go here, Blake, in just a second, but you mentioned the hearing is probably going to be in October. Again, not set yet, but sometime around then, with the NCAA's response 6 to 8 weeks beyond that. So maybe late December, early January, hopefully.
Remember when we were
fingers
hopeful.
Crossed that this is all going to finally be wrapped up?
We were hopeful that fall 2015, maybe early 2016, was going to be the conclusion of this. And
you know,
then,
my first day at WCHL was the day that the NCAA investigators arrived on campus for the first time. That's my tenure at WCHL. It begins with the NCAA.
Are you an NCAA mole?
The day that the NCAA investigators finally leave is the day I get fired, apparently. So I want them around as long as possible. I'm having fun on the air.
Goodness.
Okay, so before we let you go, we got to do it in just a second. Who's on the hook here? Are we talking men's basketball and football not included in the ANOA, and that's something that we've talked about? Women's basketball is, and maybe the athletic department as a whole.
I think the athletic department, there will be some sanction from this. You would have to imagine it may be in the form of a very large fine or something along those lines. Women's basketball, as heavily implicated as it has been, may end up being the crossbearer of all of this. And Bubba Cunningham mentioned that in his press conference today, which I know you're going to play a little later on, of saying it's not the intention of them being the scapegoat, and that he doesn't want that to ever be perceived as the case. And he said it in a better way than I just tried to paraphrase there. So we'll listen in for that later on. But it certainly seems like women's basketball, and maybe the institution, the athletic department as a whole, will face some kind of sanctions, but the revenue sports of men's basketball and football, I think that you got a point of that whenever in the conclusion it says that any allegations or charges that are brought against a team or a program that's not referenced in the NOA is going to be getting extra attention from UNC.